Welcome, lads. It's episode 33. It's a national special.
It is indeed.
But we had a good weekend at the Nationals.
It was a great day yesterday.
You had a good day, I had a bad day.
You had a shit day. I was wondering what you were doing all day. Sitting enjoying myself in the hedge.
Yeah, no, I tell you, the legs were there for 2 hours.
Were they?
They said no more.
You were? I was well impressed with the first 2 hours. And then we called. We said he looked a bit rough there. His head was tilted sideways.
Like, if I was ever writing down the worst day of prep, it was unavoidably bad prep because one of my best mates was getting married on the Saturday and I couldn't skip the wedding. It was impossible to skip, so he would have disowned me. I've known him since he was a nipper, so there was no getting out of that one. So late night, little sleep, no food.
Didn't have your lift organised until you confirmed it with me at 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock the night before. Lurky was down there on Friday. Can't be doing that at that level. You get away with it on a Sunday race.
When
Nico opens up, you won't get away with it.
No.
You were glad to be on the other side of the fence?
I actually was a bit apprehensive. I was talking to someone about it this morning. I was a bit apprehensive. It's the first Nationals I went to and didn't actually ride, so I thought it'd be a bit weird being around and not actually racing. But having Lurky there going well was an interesting feeling. Like, and he'd done a good ride, so I was actually.
And we're going to get to that in a minute. We've a load and load of good stuff to get to today. So
tons of news.
Stay tuned, lads. We're going to get through the stuff. We'll get through the shy talk to start as fast as we can. We've Roy Mullen, Lydia Boylan, who else have we got? We've got quotes from Richardson and the commissar from the TT, so it's all happening.
It's all happening today.
But first, we're going to bait through our YouTube section. I don't think we have a YouTube page now. Well, we have it in the back.
Get that printer sorted yet,
I have this YouTube page. There we go, YouTube. YouTube, we had the Cycling Maven collaboration out yesterday. It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, yeah. He's a good lad. We enjoyed that.
Nice to be in a video with him. Irishman, Englishman, Welshman, I think it's called.
It is, yeah. Don't feature for that long, but we did have a good crack with him in France.
We made an impact.
That was brief. Albeit brief, it was we made our impact, yeah.
But he's featured prominently in our vlog, which will be out as soon as you edit it.
Thanks, yeah. So,
when are you editing that?
I don't know. When? Tomorrow.
Speaking of our vlogs, you have another one. You dropped one today.
Yeah.
Sure, coming every day, every weekday.
Yeah, it's a good one there actually, and it's very topical, relevant. It's about, there's a good conversation actually in a cafe where you make a complete hit of yourself. But
I didn't let them watch it now.
I actually chopped out a part of it because you made yourself.
No, you didn't record the part.
No, I have. You explained it again. You made yourself.
No, this is like the Ryan Mullen interview. Now they take it all out of context.
Listen, right. So it's about that and Sean McKenna's prep. Up to the national champ, so he went well. He was fifth yesterday, so it's quite topical. You should check that one out.
The cycling etiquette video went down all right.
It did, yeah. It depends. It depends what website you look at.
It went down well on YouTube.
Very well on YouTube.
Did you see the comments underneath on the YouTube and Facebook?
Super positive.
They weren't so positive on boards.ie.
Dark web.
The dark web where you can buy a kidney. Boards. I get a couple of quotes from the boards, lads. I can't listen to this lad anymore. So the vlog, if anyone hasn't seen it, it's up on our YouTube now. It's called Cycling Etiquette. I think it's done 5,000 hits in like 48 hours.
Ah, went viral. Took off.
6,000, Evans told me. Side note here before we get into the story. Evan's starting to get noticed.
He is.
People are spawning.
He got noticed yesterday.
Someone sent me a Snapchat yesterday, said Evan in the wild. It was just Evan at the race.
It's class, isn't it?
Yeah, he's like a little mini celeb these days. So here's one from Dave O'Trick. I can't listen to this lad anymore. So this is the vlog where I'm going along. I break a lot of spokes and I'm walking home. And it's a parody vlog with like Benny Hill music in the background. But these lads take themselves fairly serious. I can't listen to this lad anymore. Ring a taxi and get over it. These lads used to have some good videos in the early days. But this attempt at a GCN type show is pure head in your hands cringe stuff.
GCN style?
Fucking GCN. Same. Okay, lads, we get it. You've run out of coffee. Great witty banter. Maybe you've run out of coffee because your mugs are so big. How many more times can I course? What you got?
Bellend.
So that's Dave. Thanks for that, Dave. Trick. Here's LaPierre 07.
You know what bothers me about it, though? Just before you go on, like, you know, cyclists have enough enemies out there. As soon as you pull that out, it's like, I've never seen, like, people to jump on you as quick. As in, look, Boards is probably the worst website for it going, but cyclists.
Is Boards still gone? I thought that went out with Bebo.
Fucking Bebo, yeah.
How little do you have to have going on in your day? Like,
I don't.
How many times do you pull yourself off in the day before you say, I'm going to go on boards?
I can't comprehend.
Like, you have that little going on in your life.
Yeah,
so here's Lapierre 07. Jesus, what does he want? Someone to stop and give him a wheel. Five broken sports. Of course, he could just ask someone for assistance. And we actually have a whistleblower. Rob Ryan is our whistleblower. So he's unmasking these lads for us. Actually, do you know what we should do? We should get an online spreadsheet unmasking boards, unmasking the fucking fake the internet trolls. So Lapierre 07 is none other than the Swords president, Dan Kelly. Do you know that?
I didn't know that, no.
Good club. A lot of time for the club. But these lads are hiding behind the keyboard. Not much time for that. So the Aiminator. Have you ever heard more of a virgin name than the Aiminator? Why not come on here and discuss it? Like, I won't come on there and discuss it because you're faceless, nameless troll. So Aiminator, you can come on here and discuss it. And we'll talk when you're actually a real name. But I don't think we should be too harsh on the boards, lads.
We probably shouldn't, but we weren't actually going to comment on it at all and give any of these guys a shout out, because they've arguably got what they wanted for us to have a conversation about it, which we had. But, you know, the last couple of days we've spoken to a numerous amount of people and we said, fuck it, you know what, we'll give our opinion on it. We found it funny the first couple, as soon as we found that we had great crack here in the office shut down for about 2 hours
as we had
a bit of crack reading them. But I just find it very funny that cyclists can, you know, they spend fucking so much time out on the bike and stuff, and it's such a small community. Drivers hate us, so much hatred towards cyclists, and then you see fucking other cyclists attacking other cyclists. It's bullshit.
Well, we move on, we leave them alone. I think it is cool that their Mazda still lets them live at home when they're 50 years old. That's nice. In the Mazda basement. Hang in there soon, lad. You'll meet that dream girl. And the new Warcraft is out soon, so don't worry about it. So, right, Bugle. Sportif news. We're partnering up with another Sportif. Lap of the Lock,
yeah.
I just done 2 10-week training plans today. Your grand, I don't need any help on those. So I bang them out.
Nice, you have to do something.
Well, you've done 6.5 hours preparation for the A1 show.
That's a big one.
It's a big one. It's a marquee show for us.
This is a big show.
Evan, can you cut that bit about boards out of YouTube edits just so we don't want them getting any more crack out of it? Watch boards exploding tonight. So Lap of the Lock, it's 27th of August. We'll do a full run through what the course is like. Getting closer to it. 167k. We're going to be doing that, the Leinster Loop. We might add one or two more to the calendar.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. Enjoying the Sportifs.
Yep, I'm enjoying them. I was on the old National Sportif there yesterday. It was good crack. Right, straight into them. Here it is. Domestic news. It's the big one. We've been waiting for this. It's Nationals. So we're going to break National News going forward down into Women's National News and Men's National News.
Yep.
Happy with that?
Very happy, yeah.
Yeah, I think the women's, it's the racing's getting good. And we possibly, the time constraints haven't been giving them enough time, but we're going to, even if it means extending the show a little bit longer, we'll run through their results most weeks. If someone forges the results, because a lot of time, like I'm racing still, Bugle's still in the loop, I don't know the results of the women's if they're not published.
Yeah, exactly.
And so someone forges the results and we're happy to do it. TT, Eileen Burns, Kelly Murphy and Eve McChrystal, top three.
It's a lot tighter in the men's race as well. It's only separated by less than a minute, the first and third as well. So,
but did you see the standard they're at? Like Eileen Burns' time, she's rocking a sweet Pinarello or a Cervelo P5,
mm-hmm.
and like she's full on fast on it. Like her time stacks up pretty well against some of the lads.
That does, yeah.
Now, obviously not like Mullen's time, but it stacks up well relative to some of the slower men who are still the elite men in Irish time trial.
No, I think she's still in, like close enough to 52 minutes for a 25
proper,
didn't she? That's like, that's quick. Like,
how much would she be, Evan boy?
Would Evan break the hour first DC?
Depends. Will you give him a Cervelo?
If he's on a really fast bike, he'd push it close
if he can hold it up for the hour. Hold her up right. The women's race, Lydia Boylan was the winner, third year in a row,
yeah,
big respect there.
Super right, yeah.
Lauren Kramer second, Ellen McDermott third, and I suppose, like, if you were to pick a standout performance, I think as far as I know, the top three girls are all full time.
As far as I know, and that's, I asked someone about that yesterday and they said the same thing, so that was as far as they knew as well. But
so
someone might clarify.
Fourth place with Sinead Oaks, which I think is a good, from Duron Cork. I think that's a good bit of a breakthrough standout, right?
Yeah.
Like
best of the rest.
Yeah, fourth place is such a shit place to finish. Like, just off the podium. Tired, like, I know Lurky's fifth in the road race. It's hard to finish out on fourth and fifth, I always think.
It is, yeah.
Because
yeah,
you're just outside the publicity, but I thought that was a great race. Are we going to get our first guest on?
I think we should, yeah.
You can do the intro and I'm calling there. So who we got?
Lydia Boylan. We're going to call yesterday's the women's national champ yesterday and have a chat with her about how the race went. So yeah, hopefully she picks up.
So the women's race, I'll get to this, I'll describe when Lydia's on, but the women's race was stopped yesterday for a period, which is quite controversial. I would say if Lydia doesn't answer, we'll just come back and ring her again later in the show. We still haven't had a guest not answer.
This is the Vodafone voicemail service for...
We leave her a message.
Please leave a message after the tone. When you finish recording, please hang up or press the hash key for more options.
How are you, Lydia? It's Anthony Walsh here from the A1 show. We're live here on the old A1 show, and we thought you might answer the old phone there, because we have a couple of questions for you. We'll give you a call back in a bit. Right, we'll call Lydia back in a bit. If we can't get her, we will get Evan to answer the phone and pull a funny women's voice.
We scoot on to the men's road race.
We'll come on to the men's road race, and we'll go back to Lydia, and we'll describe, because I want to talk about that stoppage in the women's race.
Okay.
Because that's controversial, so we'll scoot back to that. We'll try Lydia again in a few minutes, and if she doesn't answer...
We should go back to start to the TTs. Start
the men's TT.
Yeah.
Boom. That's the place to go.
Let's go.
Who won it?
Obviously Ryan Mullen. Our next guest on the show this evening. Ryan Mullen won it. Super impressive performance. Arguably Stonewall favourite as well, but power and the actual time he covered that course and it was incredible. Close enough to him, only 15 seconds down, surprisingly it was Nicholas Roach. Not surprising,
he's defending champ.
15 seconds to Mullen at the power that he'd done, I think, on a good day. I think that was...
But Roach beat him well last year.
Yeah. He was second. Marcus Christie was third.
Oh, was he? Oh, that's controversial.
Marcus Christie was third, 43.17, so he's 2.5 minutes, give or take a few seconds down.
But hold on. I'm confused, Booker. I have a rider here, Ian Richardson, at 42 minutes, 50 seconds. That would mean he's third.
It would mean he's third.
Oh,
yeah. So Richardson, controversially, Ian Richardson was disqualified after finishing third. He was announced as being third in the TT. Later disqualified for taking a shorter route around the roundabout. He'd done 42.50 was the original time, but he was later booted off the podium.
A full 27 seconds faster than Marcus.
Yes.
So before we get into actually what happened, so Ian has been disqualified, he's gone. So Marcus got the bronze.
Mm-hmm.
So well done to Marcus. You've been in a similar situation before.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. Like
I talked to Ian this morning and he's pretty cut up still about it.
I can imagine, yeah. I can imagine the work that he's put in to finish there. Like the time that he done, I don't know how much, what happened with him taking the shortcut, whether it was intentional or not, or how much time that had us saved. But like... No matter how much time it did save or didn't, his time was still really quick. He was in around, 43 minutes dead, roughly. That was an incredible ride. So he still would have been thereabouts. Which it's heartbreaking to lose that, like after something like that, after all that training. So I can definitely feel for Ian.
So before we get into the ins and outs of exactly what happened there, Dunbar was the notable absentee from the results.
Yeah, there's a story behind that one though, isn't there?
We are awarding Fred of the Week to Dunbar's mechanic. Dunbar had possibly the slowest bike change in the history of bike. If you have a bike change in the Nationals, you're pretty screwed anyway.
Ah, yeah, you're screwed.
But he might still, because Eddie's, he's a diesel, he still might have went close to the under 23 title.
Yeah,
the bike change.
It would have been close. Yeah, it wouldn't have been too far off, I wouldn't think.
He lost, he reckons, 2 minutes or so with the bike change. But I heard it was a full, you need an old bike, do you? And the car stopped, Dunbar's, I need the bike, and they're full on untangling the bungee cords and I heard it was shocking stuff, 2 minutes waiting there. So that's Fred of the Week wrapped up for Dunbar's mechanic. Eddie was in good form yesterday. He wasn't as usual, smashed the race to pieces, but he didn't miss much for the first half of the race.
No, he was thereabouts for the first half of the race.
Hold on, we might have Lydia on here.
Do we?
Hello? Hey Lydia, how are you? It's Anthony Walsh here.
Hey, sorry about that.
Ah, you're grand. We have you live on the old show there. We left you a voicemail. Lydia, national champ 2017. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How does it feel to win yesterday?
Yeah, pretty incredible. I mean, we're
winning one is pretty amazing. Winning three in a row, yeah, it's kind of hard to sum up, to be honest. Never really expected it. It's just difficult to get three races to go your way, so.
So Lydia,
yeah,
Lydia, you attacked from the reports. I obviously didn't see where you attacked from, but it appears like it was a good way out. Did you think at any stage you'd gone too early, or how far actually out did you go from?
At every point, yeah. I went on the clock. I kind of knew if I attacked, you know, full gas at that I could get a good gap. I kind of didn't probably get as much of a gap as I would, you know, be comfortable with, maybe. So, kind of, yeah, it led for a very panicked feel, 4K to the finish, but, thankfully it worked out.
Lydia, I suppose, controversially, the race was stopped on the last lap. How long were you guys stopped for?
Oh, geez, long enough to take a piss. It was, quite a while. Because, they have to, like, all of the men's bunch, obviously, in the cavalcade have to go by. So, yeah, it was at least 10 minutes.
Do you reckon stopping helped or hindered your chances of winning?
To be honest, I don't think it really changed anything. I'm not sure if others would agree, but kind of the point we were at in our race, you know, kind of all the attacks have kind of been made, and I think everyone was kind of, you know, probably just, we were kind of tapping along slow enough, you know what I mean, we're half a lap to go, I think everyone kind of deserved themselves, that it was going to be like a, you know, kind of save it for that last time of the climb and the run into the finish, so I think you're very lucky.
And do you think...
That it didn't affect our race, I don't think.
Lydia, do you think it could have been handled differently? Or would you like to see anything else happen? Do you think it went the right way, or do you think the organisers, the commissars, could have handled it differently?
To be honest, on the day, I'm not 100% sure what else they could have done. You know, I think it was always a possibility on that circuit that the races would come together. Yeah, you know, it was a short enough circuit, fast enough circuit, but. Yeah, the men were always going to ride it quite fast, I think. I think it's a difficult one. I think, given the circuit, I probably would have liked the races not to be run concurrently. But, you know, that's up for them, up to organisers to look at for next year, I think. I would think I was more of a fan of the women's race being on the Saturday. And then even the men to race themselves on the Sunday. Or either that, have our race before the men's on the, you know, let us help the circuit for ourselves on the Sunday morning, and let the men race Sunday afternoon.
Lydia, that's your third National Road Race title in a row. Will you be back next year, and have you got one eye on Siobhan Horgan's record?
You know, if you want to make that, it to me as soon as it crosses the
line. You're back next year for it?
No, I think Siobhan Horgan is six. I don't know.
I think she's
six,
yeah.
Nationals is always like a massive goal, but I'll take it one race at a time. As I said, winning one was special enough. I'll take everyone I can get. Three feels pretty good right now.
And Lydia, what's next on the agenda for you now? You already have the National Champs kit, so there's no point in saying you're awaiting your new kit, but what's left this season for you? What's the targets?
Oh, I can always make demands for more kit, don't worry. I'm staying in Dublin for the track international on the weekend, so I'll actually be back in normal kit for that, seeing as I'm not track champion. And then straight after that, I'm off to Austria and Germany for some stage racing in the middle of July. So, I've got a nice big 7-day stage race that I get to show off the journey at.
Lovely.
Fingers crossed, World European, so after that.
Nice. Lydia, three-time champion, deserving champion by all accounts. I hope you'll be sending us in a signed National Champs jersey for the set.
Thanks, Lydia. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, Lydia.
No worries.
Talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Lydia, she's a star.
Class.
She's a nice girl.
Yeah.
First person didn't answer.
First person, yeah.
First call we've got live on the show as well. Call us back.
Yeah, fair play.
So, I think a couple of things on that stoppage. Now's as good a time as anything to do with it. The organisers have done a great job.
I thought, like, I sat, and I was on the outside yesterday. I sat on the outside of it all, watched how it was marshalled, arguably, looked at the climb, the course itself. I thought they picked a really good course. I know the laps were short, but the racing yesterday was exciting to watch and stuff, and I think that's because the lap wasn't hard enough that the likes of Nicholas Roach and if Dan Martin came over, Dignan, these lads, they absolutely tear the race to shreds. I think it kept the race together enough that it was exciting and a lot of people could still compete.
But hard enough to be very selective at the same time.
Yes.
So I thought they got the balance perfectly, of course.
And it was well run. I thought, like to watch and to look at, I think the circuit was really good. I think they've done a good job.
But, like, they stopped the women's race for 15 minutes, I heard, on the last lap it was stopped for, which isn't, it's not, like, it shouldn't be stopped. It's not like the women's is less important than the men's. I think, logistically, that was all they could have done at that time, was to stop the women's race, because the men's was in five or six groups on the road. It wasn't possible to stop it and restart.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been able to do it. It would have been a completely different race, yeah.
Well, the women's was all together, bar two riders were at car three, I've heard. So it was possible to stop the women's, and it wasn't possible to stop the men's. So I'd imagine that's what motivated the decision. But then, like, the advanced planning that went into it, you know, some people say that should have just never happened. They should have been at completely different times. Mm-hmm. It should have never happened. But the logistical operation that went into it, this is, I always think, is a problem with amateur organisers, volunteers, giving up their time for free, and then they come in for criticism from internet trolls like the boards lads.
Can I get absolutely...
Hold on, we have Ryan Mullen on the line here.
Do we?
Hello.
Is this Aaron?
Anthony, how are you, Ryan?
Oh, not too bad, man. How are you?
Not too bad at all. How are things? Congratulations on double national champion 2017.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Good job. Have you got a sore head today?
No, I was well up for a set, but it was a Sunday night, so it wasn't really anywhere to go with it.
Fucking Coppers is always open, right?
Coppers is open every night of the week, Ryan. Don't be giving us that excuse.
Yeah, I was going to drive 40 minutes to Dublin and fucking drunk.
It's also open tonight, Ryan. Don't be shy. Just ask us. We're willing to go partying with you. Ryan, just to start off, I was probably like a lot of people. I read that Dicky Bottle article yesterday, and I thought they were very unfair with it. Some lads stuck a microphone in your face after you've just won the Nationals and raced for 170k, and then they've pulled an article together where they completely misquoted you, I felt. I'm not sure what your thoughts were on it.
Yeah, I mean... I did say it was weird, but it hasn't been taken out of context. I mean, they kind of, like, they just published what you said, but it was taken wrong. I think I came across incorrectly. I mean, obviously, if I was had the interview again, I'd still say the same, but it has been a little bit misinterpreted.
Like, I just felt, I listened to the recording of you before I read the article, and then I read the article, and the article had some stupid headline, like negative tactics, thought of abandoning the race. Like, that was a 5-second comment in quite a long piece, and they spun a headline out of it, which I always think is a bit unfair.
Yeah, I mean, like, exactly. That's how they've always done it. Think about it. They just, like, they take one tired quote out of a whole conversation and a whole headline. They have a tendency to do that.
Which is a bit shit, because you're 23 years old. 22 years old, and you just won the double Nationals.
For the first, might I add, for the first time ever, I just got this bit of knowledge from someone there this morning. It's the first time ever, and one person, David McCann, actually came close to it back in 2004, I think it was, doing the double, but you're the first person to do the double twice, 22 years of age, and then it's unfortunate that there is kind of a somewhat negative story spun at the back of it. So, you know, congratulations, Ryan. I thought it was fucking, for me, sitting in the hedge yesterday watching, it was an awesome performance. It was great to watch.
Ryan, back to the TT. You had a great ride in the TT. You had scintillating power figures. But one thing we're about to talk about at the moment was third place, Ian got disqualified. Did you think the course was clearly indicated, or was it somewhere where you could have went wrong? Like, did you think of chopping that roundabout?
No, I mean, I heard before the race that the roundabout is really heavily marshalled, and it was clear when I got there, but I knew anyway, like, I heard, like, before the start, that if you take the right, if you try and put the roundabout, you get disqualified, so I knew that before I even started, I take it, everyone did.
Mm-hmm.
So, someone asked me yesterday in the race, like, oh, before the race, like, what were my thoughts on it? I was like, well, rules are rules, everyone knew about it. I mean, if everyone else, if you're the only person to take on fair advantage, then technically it is cheating. I mean, I do feel sorry for the circumstances that he was under. I mean, it's like, I think being disqualified was a bit harsh, but also necessary at the same time. I mean, rules are rules, and no one else did it. Like, me and Nico both took the left. Like, we were supposed to do it, I guess everyone else did, because he's the only guy who got reprimanded for him. So, in that sense, the kind of, he obviously needed a risk and tried to take advantage out of it. So, I think, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I don't really feel sorry for him, but at the same time, it is a shame, because he did a great ride, too.
Yeah, so Ryan, going back to your actual power figures for the TT, I see myself as a bit of a time trialist back in the day, but these figures are absolutely nuts. 430 watts in and around as an average. Was that the game plan going out? Do you ride by power? And did you expect Roach to go as quick as he did, only 15 seconds behind?
No, definitely not. I mean, I had 440 average for the whole race, 442 normalised, whatever that means, not really sure, but definitely the highest power I've ever recorded at that time. And I was delighted. And he was on a good day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after I had a Tour de Suisse and I finished 4 days before the TT, and I was in pieces for like 3 days. It really was touching up my recovery time. Obviously, I had the travel coming here as well, so that was obviously kind of like take a little bit out of me as well. But yeah, I just obviously recovered well, and I went out. I knew it was a headwind out, so I kind of had to like manage my effort a little bit and push an extra like 10% harder in the headwind, like when it was really on, because that's where you make up the time. You don't really make up time in tailwind, because everyone, you can't really ride faster than fast.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just had to like knuckle down the headwind, and then turns out it's like I've got that on my pace and just like, but from what I heard, that Nico was 15 seconds up in the turn. I didn't get this information in the race, but after the race I was like, jeez, you must have been flying, because I pressed on in the headwind as well, and I was like overpaced, but really overpaced, because I didn't even think I'd do 440.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of had it as a goal on my head, like 430, 440 is what I need to do to win. So I did 430, I come second, so I'm quite glad.
Yeah, could you imagine like doing 430 watts for what, 40 something minutes and getting beaten? It's fucking nuts.
Yeah, I've been pretty upset, yeah.
Ryan, going into Sunday then, is it hard to keep focused for the race on Sunday, having just already won the Nationals on Thursday?
It's kind of always been my problem, because like at a European, the world TT is always first. I always go full gas to the TT. I put all my motivation and mental focus into that, and then 3 days later you've got to do a road race. So I have kind of always suffered with like a lack of motivation. Like I've always given my all, but mentally you're not like 110% focused. You kind of like I go into them like a little bit less than I would have been to the TT. So that's always kind of been my issue, but any time I wore the Irish jersey, I've always kind of 110% and everything. But you do kind of lack that final 1 or 2% when it comes to crunch time, once you've already done a ride in a TT. But yeah, like it was the same in multi-farm, I kind of went in with no pressure. I kind of felt pressure, I felt like people expected me to do something, but from a personal point of view, I didn't put a lot of pressure on myself, because I really came here to claim back the TT, because that's something I always want. I
want
to represent.
And Ryan, we had David McCann on last week talking about TT prep and the days between, say, the TT champs and the road race. He mentioned like last year, like when we were at the TT champs, we used to do a longer ride maybe after the TT, or just get it is a bit of a juggling act trying to prepare them for the road race after. What did a couple of days in between your TT and the road race look like for you? Did you switch straight back on with the road race as an objective, or did you just enjoy the couple of days, or what way did it look for you?
Well, I've never really done that. Everyone's different, like everyone's engines work differently, but obviously I just come out of this 9-day stage race, so I didn't need a lot of work. All I had to do was like take over and continue to recover.
Uh-huh.
But like in an ideal world, I'd race Thursday, done our easy ride Friday, and then opened up again Saturday.
Yeah.
But I didn't even ride my bike Friday. I was really sore. I was really tired on Friday. I didn't even ride my bike, and then I rode my bike I have a very relaxed approach. I mean, I always find that I work better when I'm relaxed. I mean, when I start putting pressure on myself and I start overthinking and over trying to overprepare, it used to go worse. I can lose a lot of mental energy. Like, I probably have the most laid back approach to a road race out of anyone in the country the other day. So, yeah, they didn't even ride Friday. Just messed around, like, didn't even stretch or anything. I just, floating around eating chips and stuff.
That's the job.
Ryan, what was the tactics going into Sunday? Did you have any tactics where you know, a lot of the pros, like, I know talking to Bramier earlier in the year, and he says national tactics nearly always the same for him. He whacks it from the start hard and tries to make a selection. Did you have any tactics in mind going in?
Yeah,
I
was kind of
roughly
the same. I mean, every year, apart from this year, we've gone the first lap and a half or two laps. So you just got to, like, be ready. Like, my tactics are, like, be ready, be at the front. Like, certainly be in the front after that first like left hander from the main road, the small road before the main climb, because I thought, like, you can't, if you're 10 wheels back there and Nico or Matt or Connor went, then you haven't really, you've got to try so much hard to close that gap. So I entered that climb first, so that was my main factor. Like, out of the whole race, I was just like, first half, different climb, third, get ready, brace yourself, it's gonna hurt. It didn't hurt. And the brake didn't even go. So the first, like, three laps, nothing was going. I was like, it was pretty negative racing. I mean, guys have the legs to chase you down, but then they have the legs to come through and give you a turn one to split mate, and then they go all comes back together. So from that point of view, it's really frustrating. It's not like a better problem with people sitting on me, because I don't, because it's something I've faced for the last 10 years of my life. But it's like when they have the legs to, like, pull one of the pests, I don't know, like, as someone who can TP well, I'm sat there at the front on my own, and these guys got the legs to bridge up for me, bridge a 10-second gap, but they haven't got the legs to give me a turn. Like,
but is it a case if they give you a turn, they're just going to blow their lights and go out the back, or do you think they have strength to be riding through with you?
The thing is, it only takes like a 5-minute effort to make a selection. Anyone can do that. As well, in the long run, like, at the end of the day, once you make that 30-second gap, it's so hard behind to close that gap, so all you've got to do is make that initial 30-second gap, and then you can settle into a rhythm and try and extend at an easier pace. That's all it is, and people can forget that. They think once you're in, it's like full gas all day. Well, it's not. It's like, I'm the last person who wants to ride the bike hard all day. Like, if you want to get the breakaway is easy in the peloton. Like, when I was up the road up the front with Matt and Sean Casey and Dara Feely, we were just like flopping off with the gap into a constant around for 3 seconds. Like, well, I'm having a great time. This is so much easier than trying to ride 1,000 watts every 30 seconds. Trying to make a gap, but it's like watching the grip, it's easy.
Lacey's a teammate of mine, so don't be afraid to give him abuse there. Is he riding trail?
No.
Brilliant.
He was the first time I was directing those comments that, like, every year it's the same people pulling the same trip.
I love it.
It was like, it gets like normally it's Paddy O'Brien. He's kind of got a reputation for doing that, but I just like, you get on with it. Like, you can't, it's like talking to a door sometimes. And Sean was just saying yesterday, and he was saying, like, he said to me, like, oh, I'm happy with four, but this sticks, I'm happy with four. I was just like, it's not going to stick unless you give us a turn. That's what I was just trying to get through to him. It's like, I don't care about the outcome, I'd rather this stick away.
But do you think that's a case of he's looking at his heart rate, or he's looking at his power, and he's managing the effort and going, if I ride through here, I'm just going to get dropped?
I don't know. I mean, when you're racing, you shouldn't be looking at that stuff anyway.
Or even going off his feeling, is he thinking, you know, if I give it to him? I know I've been in the position, I got into a chasing group at one stage just behind you, and it was Roach, Bennett, and those boys, and I was kind of, me and Owen Morton were sitting at the back, and he said to me, are we riding through? And I was like, if I do one turn, I'm gone. Like, I'm right on the edge here.
But it's not even like you're like, in that situation, when you got four guys chopping off, even if you just roll through, don't even like, just glass crank it, you give the guy behind an extra 10 seconds recovery, and that will make a difference. Like, when there's four guys in the race, and there's only three guys left, and you got some other task up behind you, like a pipe up the back, he's making it hard for himself, but he's actually in the wind. So it's like an excellent, you're always better off rotating. And even like your glass crank in the front, but then the pace is always staying. It stays constant. It doesn't even back off. It's just, people don't really know how to ride a breakaway. It's like, you're just riding through, even if you're not even putting much effort in as the other guys, you're still giving the other guys the recovery. So the pace will just stay high for a longer time. That's how it works.
So Ryan, moving slightly on from the champs, you were on the long list I read for the tour, which was pretty fucking cool in itself, really, whether you were getting picked or whether that was on the cards or not. Did you expect to get picked at any stage, or were you just happy to be announced on the long list, or what was the story there?
Yeah, I mean, like, it was huge for me to even be on that long list. I felt like I was pretty pumped about even making the long list. I mean, like, last year I had a pretty bad season, like, with my health and stuff. I had plans with even for part of the year and a lot of infections and stuff, so I just had a really, like, rich shite year, and it came good around August time. And the team were like, they rang me on Wednesday before I left the TP, like, we're sorry, you haven't made the team, but you should be really proud of how you've developed in the last 12 months.
No, cool.
I agree. Like, I was just really excited to even make that list. I mean, like, it felt like the team valued me as a rider, and they expect a lot from me, and even now they still told me to pair, and I'm the first reserve, so they told me to pair as if I was doing the tour. And like, just like, I kind of approach that first week as if I am riding, just in case I'm called, because a lot can happen. Like with nationals, people can crash with collarbones or etc. you know how it goes, you know what racing's like.
Mm-hmm.
like everyone has hiccups now and then, so. But yeah, they said it was pretty tight between me and Taylor Finney, and between the two of us, I'm really happy that he's got the slot, because I look up to him as a rider. I don't really want to jeopardize a friendship by me taking the slot in the only race he wanted to do his whole career. So,
I think it's
I'm really happy he got it over me.
It's the first time Taylor's done the tour as well, Ryan, isn't it?
That's the first time he's done it, yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan, appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today, and congrats on the double national win, a deserving winner.
Meet you in Coppers later on, 12 o'clock.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll be there.
Yeah, right. Ryan, don't forget, Lydia's sending us in a signed Nationals jersey. I'm not saying you have to do the same, but, you know, you look bad if you don't. Go on, Ryan, take it easy.
Come on, Ryan.
Bye, John.
See you later. Bye. That was class, two Nationals winners.
Brilliant, yeah. Super nice guy, Ryan.
Yeah.
I think he was taken out of context this morning. As soon as I read it, I felt bad. I seen some comments floating in. I've been on teams where Ryan was a part of a younger team, like junior teams when I was under 23. He's a nice guy, and I did feel straight away he was taken out of context this morning.
I think you just got it. Context is super important. I mean, it's 22-year-old. He's just finished the Nationals. It's not Nico Roach, who's been around the block, you know, 15, 20 times winning these huge races. He's just won the Nationals. A double at 22 years old. He finished a 170k race.
First time ever.
And he's had a microphone thrown in his face, and he's expected to answer stuff, and then he's taken at his worst on that. I have to say, I don't agree with him on the thing. I think, you know, someone that's been around the block as long as Lacey, I was in the chase group in the exact same position.
I completely agree.
And not looking at power meter, not looking at heart rate, perceived effort. I knew if I rode through once with Roach and Bennett, and they even had a slight acceleration, I was going to blow me lights.
Lacey's there, 24 years doing the Nationals. As far as I'm concerned, Lacey can do what he wants.
No, but listen, the difference there is, right, you look at Feely. Feely's riding through. He's a good rider. He's full time. Sean's not full time. He rode through with Mullen and the boys, blew his lights, and he finishes out the back. Lacey's managed his effort a bit better, and he's finished just at the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the difference.
While we're on that topic, I'm going to just go straight into it. It's kind of a segue, a little bit of a coach's corner job, but just to give you guys some of the figures and stuff that was going on in the race, I have some of the stats from Sean McKenna's ride yesterday, his SRM file. For the day, 309 watt average for 4 hours. It's 367 watt normalised power for 4 hours on the nose. The first hour was by far, as we know, the hardest hour. You were fucking twisted inside out.
No, it was grand the first hour. 2 hours I was good for. I was attacking in the first hour.
You were going well, yeah, you're going well. First hour, 406 watts normalised for the first hour. McKenna's only 75, 76 kilos, so that's ridiculously high. Final hour, 360 watts. He's on his own for a lot of that, wasn't he, as far as I know. TSS for the day, going to take a few days limping around here, 369 TSS.
So that's less than the Wicklow 200.
Yeah.
I had 427 for the Wicklow 200.
Did you?
I think so, yeah.
That's because you're afraid.
Max
power, just under 13 watts. Max minute power, 650, 1 hour into the race. Presume that's when the move was going, or the big move was going, not sure. And the highest 5 minute power was 440.
That's big.
Yeah.
But we're jumping around a lot today because of the calls. But I want to finish up on the TT thing because it is quite controversial. So Ian was, as we said, disqualified from the TT. The reason he was disqualified was deviation off course.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose there's two things that are pertinent in this. There's Article 14, which is the reason he was disqualified. So the sequence of events was Richardson rode the course, he clocked the third fastest time on the night, and an appeal was lodged by another rider to the commissar saying that Richardson failed to complete the full time trial course. So the chief commissar was Gary McElroy, the complaint was investigated, he spoke to marshals, gathered evidence, and then under Article 14 of the UCI, he disqualified him for a willful deviation from the course. He didn't cover the entire course by bike. That's Article 14, that's out of Article 14. So things on this are, it's important to note, the roads weren't closed, so that's why the marshals were indicating that way around the roundabout. Mm-hmm. So it came up to a roundabout, the marshals were ushering people around to the left of the roundabout, the longer route, like the flow of traffic. Richardson went right, there was cars on this road. So it is a dangerous move there. Article 19, Ian is lodging an appeal under. I chatted to Ian earlier on. Ian's not going to make a comment because he has the appeal coming up, but he has lodged an appeal under Article 19, which Article 19, it's of the UCI rules, and Article 19 is saying an unintentional detour of the circuit constituting an advantage is punishable by a time penalty of 20 seconds. So a 20 second time penalty still would have given Ian third place.
The crux of that whole conversation is whether it was he was aware of the shortcut.
Yeah, so it's intentional or unintentional deviation from the course is
what, the crux of the whole conversation.
Yeah, it's exactly what that appeal is going to boil down to.
Mm-hmm.
And Ian talking after the race felt that the route he took was the safest line. A quote, it was the safest line, is what the commissars were told afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So the safest line in that statement to me, reading that would mean that that was a conscious choice, meaning that falls under, this isn't my interpretation, it's the commissar's interpretation, because he said this is the safest line, that constitutes a willful deviation from the course, meaning the applicable article was the UCI Article 14, that's a willful deviation from the course, and the only punishment for a willful deviation from the course is disqualification. They have no latitude to give him a time penalty under that article.
Okay.
So it does seem that under that interpretation, the commissars on the night...
And you can understand the logic.
Yeah, you can understand exactly where they're coming from. So yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with the appeal, so we won't speculate too much on how that's going to go.
No.
There's always controversy at the TT.
There always is. I think that's why TT, in regards to the course and all that, I'm not sure like what Ian's prep was. I haven't spoken to Ian about it.
Ian had checked it on Google Maps, I heard.
You need to ride the TT course.
I'm not sure if you're on it.
I'm not sure. He might have, but I'm not sure if they, like, knowing the Nationals, I'm not sure if they could have thrown the cones out very late. But speaking to Ryan there, they were pretty much aware that they had to go around the roundabout that way.
Yeah, well, they've made Ryan aware of that because he's one of their shoe-in favourites. You don't know if he's made Ian aware of that.
Yeah. So we don't know.
Yeah. And the other controversial one that we want to just wrap up as well was the women's stoppage, 15 minutes. What's your thoughts on that? The last lap.
Well, aside from everything else, it makes the last lap a completely different effort. Because, like we were saying this yesterday, if that was me and you and McKenna were kicking the shit out of me for an hour and a half and it went straight into something that was harder, he would fucking make bits of me. But if I got a 15-minute stoppage and I got to eat and get a few drinks into me, he'd be in trouble. Do you know what I mean? You freshen up in the hour. So it changes the whole dynamic of that race. I know the race was still together, but it does make a difference. But I'm not sure what could have been done in that situation. It was a bit of a pain in the ass. I think that was just the nature of a short lap, 19, 20 kilometre loop.
So the argument is, firstly, that argument we talked about this, that the men's race should be neutralised. That couldn't have happened. Not because the men's race is the main event, not because it's more important, none of those things.
No.
They're equal importance, but the men's race logistically couldn't have been stopped at that point.
It was blown to bits.
So then the argument I've heard put forward from some of the girls is, well, could it not have been at a different time? Could they not have started it earlier? But there's just, these are volunteers that are marshalling this. And to give you an idea of the scale of this, there's 62 volunteer marshals out marshalling the corners on the course.
There's a lot of logistics as well. I heard there was train stoppages as well.
Train stoppage. And you need to be fair to the volunteers, to the people, the train stoppage. Like, it's asking a lot from volunteers to stand around. If you start the women's race at 9 a.m, you know, when you're walking backwards from that, from 3 hours for breakfast, 9 a.m, 6 a.m, they're travelling to the race, that starts becoming a very early morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very long day for asking commissars to be out there if you're starting a women's race an hour earlier and a men's race an hour later.
Yeah, it's a long day.
It's a long day for a volunteer to be standing out in the corner. And how does that work with the train stoppage as well? There's a lot of goodwill in the town. Will that goodwill extend for the day? Possibly they should have had the race a different day. I don't know, but they had calculated on the women being allowed to lose up to 9 minutes per lap and still not get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost more than 9 minutes per lap because it was like talking to Eve McChrystal on the finish, she said it was an unusually negative race. There was times
once I think everyone was racing within, like, there is no teams in the women's races, so I think everyone's racing for their own interest. No one wants to, they're either attacking or else, you know, they're sitting in and trying to save energy, which you completely understand. It's not the same as the men's race, it's a race completely differently. So they did lose more time than the organizer calculated. So
it was unprecedented how slow they went as well. The women don't normally race that slow.
Yep.
They averaged only 34k an hour, and at points in the race they were doing 24 kilometers an hour, which is training ride speed for them.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a victim of circumstances. I think the organizers have done a great job. The marshals or the commissars reacted as best as they could, and it was just one of those things. No one expected the race to be run off so slowly, whatever way the tactics panned out on the day.
Yeah,
that happened. But from my end, I think everyone done everything they could, and it was a great national champs.
I think so. Yeah.
We're going to move on to a couple of. I'm going to rattle through really fast the international news, because just to give you an idea.
Announced earlier today, Cavendish is riding the tour. That's we weren't sure after having glandular fever. We didn't think he was going to start the tour, but they have announced that he is riding it, which moves us into the British national champs. Legend Steve Cummings won the TT, beat Alex Dowsett, TT specialist, into second by 9 seconds. And the Ross winner, James Gullen, super ride by him. We called him Rafa, they're not Rafa anymore, but he was down 51
they're
seconds.
Still Rafa.
51 seconds down, but incredible ride. Cummings on the way back. I love a comeback story like that from a bad injury. So Cummings broke his collarbone, scapula, and sternum at the Pay Vasco in early April, and it's been a comeback mission since then. And he done the double this weekend, the same as Ryan Mullen did, winning the TT and the road race.
But I'm going to rattle through just a few of the other ones, and then we'll get into a couple of Ask A1 questions. We'll wrap it up there. So the road race was Cummings again, done the double. Lawless and Bibby again, Rafa. The women's race was our very own reclaimer, Lizzie Deignan, won the race. Archie Ball second, with Hannah Barnes coming toward. Aru won the Italian. Giovanni Moscon struck a blow for the Ku Klux Klan, winning the Italian National TT.
Nice.
Oliver Nason won Belgian. Aqua Blues, Larry Warbas won in the US. Tony Martin surprisingly won the German TT champs. And Aro Demar beat the fans' favourite Nassan Boukhani to win the French.
Yes, he did.
Ask A1 questions. I'm going to wrap this up here today. We're on a bumper show, but I think we're testing the fans' patience here at the moment, or the listeners' patience. So can you talk about how Ryan was saying about County Riders being negative? We already done that. The whole issue of the Clontarf bike, Pat and the boards lads being dickheads, we've done that. Your newfound understanding of the tough circumstances, the Wicklow 200, some key sessions, we'll do that one next week. Why is Stephen Roach less popular than Sean Kelly? I don't think Stephen Roach is less popular than Sean Kelly.
Oh, definitely.
No, I don't think that's true. I think they're of equal legendary status, and rightly so. Mm-hmm. This is the one I want to get into. Typical salary of your top domestic, continental, and pro-continental riders. Well, I can definitely speak of the domestic. I don't know about the top domestic. I can speak of the domestic lads. You've probably more experience than the pro lads. The domestic lads, we aren't making a salary. There's zero cash.
Leaking money.
So with Aqua Blue, I paid €250 to do the Ross this year. I got free kit at the start of the year. I paid for my license. And yeah, we're completely rider funded. Nearly the big contribution from Aqua Blue was our kit at the start of the year. I think we had a budget around €10,000, could even have been less, to run the entire year. So there's big rider contributions, and you lose a lot of money. Now, I know some teams are better funded. Planet X, didn't have to pay for the Ross.
No, arguably. And I didn't put anywhere near as much prep into my year as a lot of guys did, so I feel a bit bad about that. But no, I didn't have to put my hand in my pocket, and it was. They are an exception.
And Square is covered as well.
Everything.
So I forked over €350 yesterday. For Aqua, so that was a puncture during the week, and by a tub as well off the team.
Yeah, no, everything.
So you're all covered.
Yeah,
that's good.
It is rare. So moving on to say continental level teams, so that's where people would think, because they're continental pro, they think there's contracts with money.
So we're talking here on post. We're talking Rafa, Wiggins,
all the English teams, Wiggins, that kind of level. The vast majority of those guys aren't on any wages at all. Some of them will be on, say, expenses contracts, which will be in and around maybe 10 or 12 grand a year. That's supposed to, and that means that's from that money, contribution to flights flying in and out of the country to certain races will come from that money as well. So
most of them are on less than the dollar.
Yeah,
it's fair to say.
Safe to say, yeah. There will be some guys within those continental teams that are, say, the bigger names. So the bigger names in the UK that are on those Conti teams, like Rafa and stuff, that will be receiving a lot more money than that. But they're few and far between. When you step up the pro Conti level, that's in and around where the lads will be receiving like minimum wage contracts, and the top pro Conti lads will get a nice few quid as well.
But we had this controversy in Italy a couple of years. The minimum wage is the minimum the club has to pay them.
And then take money back.
In a lot of times, then there is a mandatory contribution for coaching from the rider to the club, which can be sometimes 100% of the salary. So again, they're back into the situation of riding for free. So that's massively prevalent in World Tour, or maybe not World Tour teams, but pro continental teams.
I think the biggest difference between salaries then, when you step up then to the proper pro tour lads, is the lads that are winning or the top domestique. So you can be, so some pro tour riders are still down around 30,000-40,000. But the difference is, like, I think I read before, Chris Froome was on maybe 500,000-600,000 when he was a domestique, or for Wiggins back in the tour days. Like, he's on whatever, 3 or 4 million as a contract now. So the difference is winning for those guys. I think Dan Martin's contract almost went skyrocket when he won, started winning the classics.
But they're the very best riders in the world. For your general pro tour riders, they're earning as much as a postman, probably.
Yes.
Yeah, which is, and they're risking their life for it. Like a postman and Finglas, risking their life for their salary. Lads, it's been the show where we chat with the two-time double champ, Ryan Mullen, and the 3-time ladies champ, Lydia Boylan. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, lads. Thanks for joining us.